You're at 37,000 feet. You've paid for the Wi-Fi. You hit send on one email, and you watch that little spinning wheel turn and turn and turn. By the time it goes through, you've forgotten what you wrote. Every one of us has lived that moment. And for 20 years, the industry's answer was basically a shrug. I'm Vector, and this is Clear Direct here on Radio Hangar. Today we're going to talk about why airplane internet has been so bad for so long, and about the technology that's genuinely starting to fix it. Not with hype, with physics. Let's break this down before we get into it. This segment is supported by AviationSoul.com. They make aviation challenge coins that mark the real milestones. First solo, private pilot, instrument rated, CFI, the whole journey, beautifully made and built to last. If you want something in your pocket that actually means something, that's AviationSoul.com. So here's the core problem, and it's a problem of geometry. For decades, the way you got a signal to an airplane in cruise was to bounce it off a satellite, and almost all of those satellites sat in what we call geostationary orbit. That's a very specific altitude, roughly 22,000 miles straight up. At that exact height, a satellite circles the Earth once every 24 hours, which means it appears to hang perfectly still over one spot on the ground. That's incredibly useful. One satellite can cover a huge chunk of the planet, and your antenna doesn't have to chase it across the sky. It just points at one fixed spot. That's the technology behind the old airplane Wi-Fi. It's the technology behind satellite TV. It works, but it has one problem you cannot engineer your way around. The speed of light. Here's what most people miss. Light is fast, but it is not infinite. A radio signal traveling up to a satellite 22,000 miles away and then back down has to cover 44,000 miles just for a round trip. And your data doesn't go up and come straight back to you. It goes up, back down to a ground station, and then the reply has to make the whole trip again. You're looking at something close to 90,000 miles of travel for a single request and response. Even at the speed of light, that takes time. Real time. We're talking about a delay of around 6/10 of a second, just baked in before anything else even happens. Engineers call that latency, and latency is the reason your video call from seat 14C sounds like two people talking over a bad walkie-talkie. It's not that the connection is slow in terms of raw data, it's that every single back and forth carries this unavoidable tax paid to the distance. The data tells an interesting story here, because that latency number is a physical constant. No amount of software, no better compression, no clever engineering makes light travel faster. If your satellite is 22,000 miles away, you are stuck with that delay, period. So the obvious question is, why not move the satellite closer? And the answer for a long time was because you couldn't, not practically. If you drop a satellite down to what we call low Earth orbit, say 300 to 350 miles up, two beautiful things happen. First, your signal delay collapses. Instead of 44,000 miles up and back, you're covering a few hundred. The latency drops from around 6/10 of a second down to something like 40 milliseconds. That is a night and day difference. 40 milliseconds is faster than a lot of ground-based internet. Suddenly, video calls work. Live streaming works. The connection feels like the one in your living room. That's the promise. Now here's the problem that kept anyone from doing it for 50 years. A satellite that low can't hang still over one spot. Remember, geostationary only works at that one magic altitude. Down low, the satellite is screaming across the sky, orbiting the entire planet in about 90 minutes, from the ground, or from your airplane. It comes up over one horizon, races overhead, and disappears over the other side in a matter of minutes. Then it's gone. So, to cover the whole Earth all the time, you don't need one satellite, you need thousands of them, blanketing every orbit so that the instant one drops below the horizon, another one is already climbing up to take its place. You need a constellation. And building a constellation of thousands of satellites means launching thousands of satellites, which, until very recently, was absurdly, impossibly expensive. This is where the space side of the story crashes into the aviation side, and this is the part I find genuinely fascinating as an engineer. The only reason low Earth orbit internet exists today is that the cost of getting to space fell off a cliff. Reusable rockets, boosters that fly themselves back and land upright and get stacked and flown again, dragged the price of a launch down by a huge factor. SpaceX built its Starlink constellation on the back of that. They put up thousands of small satellites, and they keep launching more. Other players, Amazon with its Kuiper system, Europe with its own plans, are chasing the same idea. But the launch economics had to change first. The airplane Wi-Fi in your seat back is, in a very real sense, a downstream benefit of the reusable rocket. Now, there's a second piece of technology that had to mature at the same time, and it's just as important. It's the antenna. Think about the old geostationary setup. The satellite sits still, so your antenna can be a simple dish that points at one fixed spot and never moves. Easy, but a low-orbit satellite is racing across your sky, and it hands you off to the next one every few minutes. Your antenna has to track a fast-moving target, let go of it, and instantly lock onto a new one coming up over the horizon, all while your airplane is doing 500 knots and banking into turns. A spinning mechanical dish on top of an airliner would be a maintenance nightmare and a drag penalty nobody wants. The solution is called a phased array antenna, and it's elegant. Here's the idea. Instead of one dish that physically moves, you build a flat panel packed with hundreds or thousands of tiny individual antennas. None of them move at all. There are no motors. But by very precisely controlling the timing of the signal from each little element, you can steer the combined beam electronically. You point the antenna with software, not with a motor, and you can swing that beam across the sky almost instantly, fast enough to hand off from one satellite to the next without you ever noticing a hiccup. A flat panel. No moving parts, steered by math. It sits low on top of the fuselage, sips relatively little power, and tracks a whole constellation of racing satellites. That antenna is every bit as much the breakthrough as the rocket. Without it, none of this works on an airplane. So let's talk about what this actually means in the cabin, because this is a product review, and I want to be honest about both sides. The upside is real, and I'm not going to undersell it. Airlines that have rolled out low Earth orbit connectivity are reporting the kind of experience passengers have literally never had at altitude. Fast enough to stream video, low enough latency for real video calls, and in many cases the airline is now giving it away for free, because the economics changed enough that free Wi-Fi becomes a way to win customers, instead of a cost center. Several major carriers have signed on. You're seeing it show up on narrow-body fleets, on regional jets, and it's moving fast into business aviation, where a cabin full of executives who need to actually work in flight will pay real money for a connection that behaves. For those of us in general aviation, the trickle-down matters too. The same core technology is shrinking. The antennas are getting smaller and lighter, and the day is coming, sooner than you'd think, when a hard, reliable broadband pipe into a light airplane is normal rather than exotic. And that's not just about passenger comfort. Think about what a fat, always-on data connection does for real-time weather in the cockpit, for streaming engine and systems data to the ground, for the kind of connected operations that used to be the exclusive domain of the airlines. That's the interesting frontier. But here's where I put on the engineer's hat and give you the caveats, because there are real ones. First, this is a shared resource, and physics doesn't care about your marketing. Every one of those satellites has a finite amount of capacity, and it's covering a big slice of the Earth beneath it. When you're the only airplane in that footprint, it's glorious. But over a busy corridor, the Northeast United States, the approaches into a major hub, Europe on a weekday, you've got dozens of aircraft, plus every boat, every RV, every rural house on the ground, all pulling from the same satellites overhead. Capacity gets divided. The honest truth is that the experience can vary depending on how many people are drinking from the same well at the same moment. It's better than the old system by a wide margin. It is not magic, and it is not infinite. Second, there's the question of the constellation itself. These low-orbit satellites don't last forever. Down at that altitude, there's still a whisper of atmosphere, just enough drag that a satellite's orbit slowly decays. These birds have a working life of maybe 5 years or so, and then they're deliberately brought down to burn up and replaced. That means the whole system depends on a permanent, ongoing launch cadence forever. You're not building a bridge and walking away, you're running a treadmill. It works beautifully as long as the launches keep coming and the company stays healthy. It's a real dependency worth being clear-eyed about. Third, and this is the industry analysis piece, we should be honest about what thousands upon thousands of satellites in low orbit mean for everybody else. Astronomers have raised legitimate concerns about bright satellite trains washing out their observations. And there's the harder problem of orbital traffic. The more objects you put up there, the more you have to actively manage collisions, because a single crash in orbit creates a cloud of debris that threatens everything around it. The companies involved have collision avoidance systems, and the satellites maneuver on their own to dodge each other. But as a systems thinker, I'll tell you, when your safety margin depends on tens of thousands of automated objects all correctly getting out of each other's way, That is a system worth watching very carefully. This is a genuine open question, not a solved one. So where does that leave us on the honest timeline? This one's unusual, because it's not vaporware. It's not a demonstrator that flew once and went back in the hangar. It's flying right now, on real airline fleets carrying real passengers today. The rollout across the airline world is underway and accelerating. Business aviation is adopting it quickly. The general aviation trickle-down is early but visibly coming. This is one of the rare cases where I get to tell you the technology is already here, not 5 years out. The competitive picture is the part still being written. Starlink has the head start and the launch capacity, but Amazon's Kuiper constellation is going up. The established players like Viasat and Intelsat aren't standing still, and they still own real advantages over the ocean, and in parts of the world where the low orbit coverage is thinner, the likely future isn't one winner. It's airplanes carrying gear that can talk to more than one network, geostationary and low orbit both, and intelligently pick whichever gives the better connection at that moment over that patch of Earth. Redundancy, which as pilots is a philosophy we already understand in our bones. Here's the thing I want you to take away from all of this. The reason your airplane Wi-Fi was bad for 20 years was never laziness. It was distance. It was the plain, unbending speed of light against 22,000 miles of empty space. And the reason it's finally getting good is that we didn't beat the speed of light. We just moved the satellites close enough that it stopped mattering. That took a cheaper rocket and a smarter antenna, arriving at the same time. Two hard problems solved in parallel, and the payoff shows up as a video call from a window seat. That's how real progress usually works. Quietly and from a direction you weren't looking. My thanks to the reporting from the Aviation and Space Trade Press and to the technical material the operators and antenna makers have put out on how these systems actually function. If you want more on the engineering behind the flying you love, we're at RadioHangar.com. I'm Vector. Next time you're up there and the connection just works, take a second to think about the flat little panel over your head. Quietly doing the math. It's a beautiful piece of engineering. See you next time.